Mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, with 1 week to go, local officials are making final preparations for the solar eclipse. Mayor Christina Mern gives an overview of everything residents need to know about what's coming. Plus, some 40,000 kids and adults will participate in today's White House Easter egg roll. As always, America's egg farmers will be at the center of it all. A new study reveals gender differences that often put women at a significant disadvantage when it comes to money management and long-term financial security. We'll take a closer look. And have you nominated your favorite teacher for this year's Golden Apple Awards? The Findlay Rotary Club wants to hear from you. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, April 1st, 2024. By the way, if you are among those who don't have to work on this Easter Monday, day after Easter, to you, we say, so there. That would include my wife, by the way. She didn't have to work today. If you have the day off, fine. Be that way. But for the rest of us, it is back at it. Today, so hopefully you had a good Easter celebration with family and those that you love. And of course, for many people, although it is obviously a religious holiday, the candy, it's all about the Easter candy. The folks at candystore.com surveyed 6,000 of their customers, the online candy shop, candystore.com. They have a list of the most and least popular treats to find in your Easter basket. So the number one best Easter candy, according to candystore.com, Cadbury mini eggs, solid chocolate with a hard candy shell. Those are yummy. Cadbury mini eggs. Now, those are not to be confused with the Cadbury cream egg, which actually tops the list as the worst Easter candy. So Cadbury's holds the distinction of having the number one item on both the best and worst lists. The Cadbury mini eggs, number one. Reese's peanut butter eggs, number two. Gourmet jelly beans. Now, want to make sure that we clarify this. We're not talking about the off-brand, knockoff, generic jelly beans. We're talking about the gourmet jelly beans. Only the finest. The Whopper's Robin's Eggs, which are malted milk balls with a candy shell. I like those, too. Those are good. I like malted milk balls. I know some people don't, but that's Whopper's Robin Eggs, number four, and the Mallow Top Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, like your normal Reese's Cups, but with marshmallow because of Easter. So those are the top five. As we mentioned, the Cadbury cream egg tops the list of the worst Easter candy. They are as divisive this time of year as candy corn is at Halloween. And candy corn, of course, is rebranded with spring colors as Easter corn this time of year. And it is number two on the worst list. Taking third place on the worst ranking, Peeps marshmallow Easter yellow, the little yellow chicks, the marshmallow chicks, Peeps, was actually third. Again, very divisive. Some people love them, some people hate them. Fourth place this year on the worst candy list belonged to the chocolate-covered marshmallow eggs. As one survey taker said, they look better than they taste. And number five, I thought this was kind of interesting, the worst Easter candy. Number five on the list, solid chocolate bunnies. Because as one person says, it's too much of a good thing. Solid chocolate bunnies are great in theory, but in practice, they're a commitment I'm not always ready to make, says one person. So they, I remember when I was a little kid, my parents would never, I mean, the solid chocolate bunnies were absolutely taboo in the house. The hollow ones, that's fine. But the solid chocolate... Yeah, my mom was like, that's just too much. I always used to really envy the kids that got the solid chocolate eggs because or the solid chocolate bunnies, because we always got the hollow ones, and I always felt like I got ripped off. But apparently, the solid chocolate bunnies are not all they're cracked up to be. So if you are among those who got the hollow bunnies, don't feel cheated, because that's actually the better of the two, apparently. So there we go. The one thing that we did notice, and we were talking about this last week, leading up to Easter, is the rising cost of Easter eggs, chocolate candies were more expensive this year because there's a big cocoa shortage or something, and it's, so it's driving up prices. But eggs also more expensive because of a global shortage of eggs. And because of that, I thought this was kind of interesting. You know, we're not the only ones who celebrate Easter. Norwegians actually went across the border to Sweden to stock up on eggs this Easter. Norwegians have been invading Sweden for their eggs. The Nordby Shopping Center in Sweden was reportedly full of Norwegians stocking up for Easter. The supermarket had to limit the number of eggs purchased to 3 packs per household. A nearby store actually ran out of eggs on Tuesday of last week, so well ahead of the Easter holiday. Egg prices and demand are high in many parts of the world, in part due to the lingering impact of bird flu, which hasn't been a thing this year, but the lingering effects still making eggs hard to come by. I just thought that was... this is amazing. Norwegians invading Sweden. And I know, isn't it Sweden that always tries to remain neutral in geopolitical conflicts? But they're fighting back on this Easter egg thing. We're not gonna let our country be invaded for our Easter eggs. let's see here. Speaking of foods that are insanely expensive, I saw this. Apparently, this is a product that is now available in the United States if you are willing to pay big bucks. Pearl white strawberries. Pearl white strawberries. Now, I'm not a strawberry person, so I have not noticed this. Is this something that you can buy at any store? I don't know. Apparently, it is a what they call a luxury fruit, which I didn't even realize was a thing, but it is a luxury fruit, and the retailer of this luxury fruit, Igikai Fruits, is shipping its produce to America. Bright red Kotoka strawberries start at $89 for 500 grams, and a combination of Kokota, Awayuki, and Pearl White strawberries will set you back $780 for strawberries. $780. They also sell crown melons for $128 each. Apparently, these fruits, it says, require hours of constant monitoring. The growing process is usually done manually. Farmers actually go out and put hats on top of the fruits to guard them from the sun. They're so sensitive to this. And only the cream of the crop make the cut, which is why these fruits are so rare and treasured, according to the company. $780 for the pearl white strawberries. Would you? I'm sorry. I would see that price tag and I say, you know, we'll just get the regular strawberries, you know? That is crazy. But I'm sure some folks are, you know, they're all the rage, the yuppie set and all of that. But, boy, there's a term we don't use anymore. Anyway, let's see here. While we're on the subject of food, I guess I'll mention this, which was an interesting story I saw on the Newswire over the weekend. Apparently, the government is thinking of reclassifying potatoes. They would no longer be vegetables. Now, I think this is a bit of hubris on the part of the government. I mean, who is the government to declare this is no longer a vegetable? But this is what the government is looking to do. They're going to say that potatoes are no longer vegetables. They're going to reclassify them, or they want to reclassify potatoes as a starch, which would put them in the same category as grains. A number of lawmakers have written to federal agencies protesting a possible change. The 2025 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee has been tasked with providing science-based advice to help inform dietary recommendations, and these new guidelines will roll out next year. And that's when they could reclassify potatoes. They say while they do provide nutrients like potassium, calcium, and fiber, they are also higher in carbs and have a higher glycemic index. And thus, changing the classification of potatoes could impact school lunches and other nutrition programs. And as I mentioned, 14 members of Congress have issued an open letter requesting that potatoes not be reclassified. Among the members of Congress who are up in arms about this, Maine Senator Susan Collins and Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, who say that such a move would immediately confuse consumers, retailers, restaurant operators, growers, and the entire supply chain. I don't know if I would go that far. I mean, potatoes are still potatoes, right? Whether the government calls them starches or vegetables, I think we all are pretty set in our ways with potatoes. I don't know that it would confuse us necessarily, but that's what they say. And they say, don't mess with our potatoes. the government thinks a lot of themselves. They can just willy-nilly reclassify a vegetable as not a vegetable. I mean, this is nature. You're fooling with nature. Speaking of nature and the boldness of politicians, you know, the other thing with the potato story is I'm glad that these 14 members of Congress have their priorities straight. I mean, we may be going to hell in a handbasket, but by golly, we're going to make sure that potatoes are not reclassified and are no longer considered vegetables. Speaking of politicians messing around with nature and science, Pluto has now been designated the official state planet of Arizona. Again, you would think that they would have more important things to do, but in Arizona, they have named Pluto their official state planet, which well, that was kind of odd that a state would have an official planet. That just seems weird to me somehow. An official state planet. Governor Katie Hobbs signed the legislation on Friday. How did we miss this story at the end of the week? Now, this is where the controversy comes in. Of course, Pluto is not a full planet. Doesn't have full planetary status. Officially, it is a dwarf planet. But Arizona Representative Justin Wilmoth does not seem to mind. He said, quote, "It might matter to some that are going to get picky or persnickety about it, but no matter." Still, Arizona state planet. Is this the biggest controversy in Arizona? Again, I wish we lived in a state where this could be the biggest thing that people are talking about. Is the new official state planet really a planet? And why does a state have an official planet? I could see maybe a planet would have an official state, but I don't. The other way around seems a bit bold. Of course, Arizona is like many states. They have a number of official designations, including, incidentally, and this is something that Ohio doesn't have. I think we need one of these. Arizona has a state dinosaur as well. Wow, they are bold. State dinosaur, state planet. Think big, Arizona. Go big or go home. Sonarosaurus is the state dinosaur in Arizona, by the way. Care. But now, you know, every state's going to be rushing to get an official state dinosaur and a state planet. There aren't a whole lot of state planets, or there aren't a whole lot of planets. So, you know, we'd better get in and grab ours before somebody takes our planet. I don't know which planet we would prefer. Maybe we should put a survey out there. Which planet would Ohioans prefer? I don't know. Anyway, some of the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Four people were killed and another was seriously injured in a wrong-way crash on Interstate 71 in Morrow County early Sunday morning. Colin Dorsey from WBNS-TV in Columbus has details.
Highway Patrol tells us 32-year-old Larry Dotson was driving north in the southbound lanes when he hit another car head-on. Both vehicles flipped over and then caught fire. Dotson and his passenger died at the scene. The car he hit had three people from Columbus inside. Two of the passengers, Crystal and Ivan Olerva, died. The driver is in the hospital with serious injuries.
Anyone using AEP is starting to pay more for energy today. Yolanda Harris with ONN affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus reports.
AEP announced a $10 a month increase in transmission fees. AEP customers' bills are divided into transmission rates, distribution rates, and generation rates. AEP says transmission rates are going up April 1st based on a formula that looks at how much energy is consumed during peak times. The company says residential rates are going up, but industrial rates won't, and that's because residential customers tend to use more energy during peak times of the year.
ONN meteorologist Michael Behrens tells us most of the state of Ohio will likely see a continuation of severe weather over the next 48 hours, with the greatest chance for damaging storms on Tuesday. Stay tuned to your local station for the Ohio News Network. I'm Jay Fox.
So now our cover story this morning, no joke here, it is just 1 week to go until the total solar eclipse, and local officials are making those final preparations. Mayor Christina Mern is with us this morning with an overview of what folks need to know about what we know is coming and what we believe is coming. And these are actually kind of two separate things. I mean, I know that there has been, that you've been tracking, you know, like availability, hotel reservations, and those types of things over the past several weeks. What is the best estimate of what we know at this point?
Yes. So we definitely are seeing our hotels having great occupancy. A lot of people, I know I've heard anecdotally from citizens, you know, churches getting phone calls from out-of-state churches saying, hey, when our people visit, can they use your restrooms, or can they park in your parking lot? You know, people from all over the world looking to come to our area. Our hotels, as long as the weather, you know, is looking good, and right now we're looking pretty good. They have 3-day cancellations, so, or 8-day cancellations. So we're keeping an eye on that. But right now it looks like we're going to have, you know, at least, you know, 5,000 additional people coming. But as predictions were with from EMA, we're expecting that our populations will probably quadruple for a couple of days.
So that is, and this is the part that we don't really know. Yeah. And we've been saying really from the very beginning is this is the thing that makes it so difficult, are the people who will come, I don't want to say on a whim, but have not necessarily made firm plans because obviously the weather and we don't know. That's the part that we don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, we're fortunate that we're a very accessible community, right? That's why we have so much logistics and manufacturing here. Mm-hmm. But that also means that people are within a day's drive. And there definitely will be people that are going to drive up from Tennessee, you know, maybe that morning, stay just for a couple of hours, and then leave that night or find a way, you know, on their way back home to stop. So I think we're going to see a lot of influx the day of, the day before. And then we do have the folks that are here to stay, are going to make a weekend of it. We'll probably hang out the rest of that day, maybe leave on Tuesday or Wednesday. So I think my biggest thing is we're prepared. Now it's the fun part, is I want people to just enjoy the experience. This is something that we're probably not going to experience again in our lifetime. And being able to show off our community and welcome folks that are here experiencing it for the first time, and hopefully they'll come visit again. So I think, you know, making sure that folks are ready to view it safely themselves, but also just be prepared for others to want to view it in our community as
that,
well.
That obviously is the goal, to put our best foot forward and, you know, hopefully make some of those connections. Yeah. Some of those people will be coming back. Some of them will obviously be enjoying the things that the community has to offer during their stay.
And yes,
as mentioned, hoping that that people come back. But the concern has always been with a huge influx of people. Again, if you're talking about the possibility of tripling or quadrupling mm-hmm. our population, we're not necessarily set up to handle that. So what are the biggest concerns? What do people need to know as we individually make our plans for, you know, what's coming on April 8th?
Yeah, I think our team has been saying to pack your patience. To mm-hmm. if you're planning to be out and about those couple of days, driving or different things, expect, you know, much more traffic, people that maybe don't know how to best get through our community. So give them a little grace. You know, if you can get to the grocery store a couple of days earlier, don't, you know, plan to go out where all the other people are going to be going out. But really, I think it's just to be aware. You know, if you can park your car off the street, park your car off the street, keep an eye on your neighborhood, check on your neighbors, you know, just that they have what they need to watch safely. But really, I think we have made sure that there's not construction going on. Any construction areas will be cleared so that people, there's not as many obstructions. We're limiting the number of roads that can be closed for block parties. We are going to have, you know, EMS and police staged throughout the community, some of those different things.
That's what I was going to ask. What logistically is being planned? Because that was, again, one of the concerns going in when all these discussions started is, will emergency services be able to reach people if the need should arise while, you know, we're packed to the gills with all these people? So you're looking at deploying those resources ahead of time?
Yeah, so we're doing a couple of different things. First of all, you know, our fire stations are spread throughout the community anyway. So if there's an area where we feel like there's not sufficient EMS coverage with their stations, we will have kind of teams located at the fire stations. Police are always distributed throughout, but we are going to have increased patrol all of those days. So our police officers are going to be working longer shifts, overlapping, and pretty much all of everybody's working. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely going to be
all hands on deck.
Staffed up. We are staffed up for emergency situations. We're fortunate, though, that our community, even in the event that there is a slower delay to get to folks, I have full assurances that we're going to be able to get to you. And with the Opticon system, which is our EMS, fire, our emergency services, their ability to change traffic lights, that's going to help them still be able to get where they need to go. Plus then our fire department are trained to be able to respond to medical incidents. So we feel really comfortable that our team is prepared. And then on the day of the solar eclipse, we're additionally going to have police and emergency services staged at our watch areas.
There have been a number of official watch areas designated.
Correct.
And that's one of the things with people coming in who are not familiar with the community, that gives you the opportunity to steer them to specific locations to view the eclipse. We know that there will be people in other spots, but generally you're trying to concentrate the gatherings where? What are going to be those areas to avoid, frankly? If you want to avoid the most mass of people.
Yeah, so we tried to have them spread throughout the community so that our citizens could also walk to them. So the Cube, Emory Adams, Swale Park are kind of the main ones. Then we're going to have, obviously, there's a couple of other park areas that we didn't include on there. Our Oakwoods Nature Preserve is also a watch site. But I would say try to just find a park in your area. Obviously, the biggest thing is not having a lot of tree coverage so that you have good visibility of the sky. But we tried to distribute them throughout the community so that everybody kind of had a spot to be able to walk to if they chose to.
Now, you mentioned that limiting or eliminating the construction areas and making sure that those roads are cleared on that same subject, are there going to be traffic flow restrictions or anything like that that people are not necessarily used to?
No, we talked through if we were going to turn any roads into one ways or try to, you know, limit anything like that. But as we talked through it, we felt keeping our existing traffic patterns was going to be the most efficient to be able to move people through the community. So I believe ODOT is having sign boards along 75, some of those different things. But there's not any changes in traffic patterns unless your neighborhood is having some sort of block party.
Yeah. So again, the best advice to residents to plan ahead, you mentioned grocery trips, gas stations, that kind of thing, because there is the concern that, you know, maybe with the influx of people, there might be stations that run out?
No, that's not really my concern. I think everybody is well prepared for the volume. I think it's just going to be crowded. So if you don't want to be waiting in line for long periods of time, which I know I'm not a very patient person like that. I know my husband isn't. So we, you know, plan ahead, get our groceries, be ready. And so, you know, my husband's gone this weekend. I'm going to try to, he normally does the grocery shopping. So probably Wednesday or Thursday this week, I'm going to try to go do the grocery shopping, which is something I need to think about because that's not normally my plan.
That's really the, and we don't want to cause a run on the stores prematurely either ahead of time. I mean, that's the other thing that, you know, you go out and tell people, you know, stock up on your groceries, you know, fill up your gas.
You're not going to be stuck in your house for days.
Yeah.
So nobody panic. So, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
But it's going to be busy. So if you don't want to have to deal with busy, try to plan ahead and maybe adjust when you typically go.
That's the bottom line. Other than that, you don't foresee any other issues to the extent that you've been able to talk through, you know, those scenarios.
Yeah, we've been working on this for years. Yeah. This has been something that we have kept on our mind that we have been planning for. And, you know, we have porta potties that we, you know, we rented hundreds of, well, not, we rented over 100 porta potties to put out at the stations and all those different things that we really thought ahead on. So no, I'm not expecting anything crazy. You know, we checked with cell service. One thing that they did tell us is if you please don't live stream the solar eclipse, because that takes up a lot of signal. And then if there is an emergency, the lines can get bogged down. So they are prepared. They have increased the signal in this area and along the path of totality to help with that. But if you can avoid doing things, take a video of it, do the time lapse, and upload it later.
Yeah. How, Chris, you mentioned that the preparation has been going on for quite some time.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it for weeks. You've been planning for months, even years, on this. What's that experience been like? I mean, this is something that we haven't seen before, haven't had to plan for before.
Yeah.
What has that experience been like planning for an eclipse of all things?
I think the City of Findlay team is just ready for it to be over. We're very excited to show off our community, but we definitely, a lot of it has been, okay, how do we adjust our operations? How do we make things our stage? What are going to be the logistical challenges? You know, I joke about the porta potties, but we reserved porta potties a year and a half ago because we knew that everybody else in this area was also going to need it. We talked through, do we need additional signboards? Do we need cones if we're going to change traffic patterns?
Yeah.
How do we make sure that our emergency services have priority cell service? How do we have people staged? What does our staffing look like? How do we make sure that our businesses are aware and that they're prepared? And so a lot of it was just like talking through and making sure, okay, what if this happens? We know what to do.
Yeah, but there are things that you have never had to really deal with before.
Right. So things that we talked through is, okay, we're going to have increased water consumption. Do we need to have anything else at our water pollution, at our water treatment plant or water pollution control to have increased, you know, capacity?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if we lose power, if there is an emergency, how long can we run our systems in that. So it was a lot of just talking through our normal emergency procedures, mm-hmm. but with them under a little bit additional stress.
The advantage here being that we know exactly when this is going to happen.
Yes.
You don't know when an emergency, like a weather emergency, a tornado, a flood, yeah. you know, something like that is going to happen. You know when this is going to happen.
Correct.
So yeah. that's the one advantage that you do have in all of
yeah,
this.
Yeah, and then I would just remind people to have your safety glasses to be able to safely right. view. And remember that you're not going to want to be driving around that period of time, because if you are driving, you can't wear the safety glasses
right.
and drive safely at yeah. the same time. So, you know, just being smart, being prepared.
Planning your day.
This is the event. And so just enjoy it.
And how reassuring has it been to see the number of, obviously, schools are closing mm-hmm. Because this is going to be happening about the same
yeah,
time
right when school that
schools
begin
to be letting out. So you don't want that. So just canceling for the day. But a number of businesses have also decided to either try and go remote or just close for the day. And, you yeah. know, that's actually helped.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's well. Been good. We definitely have talked to a lot of businesses and we've said, listen, you can stay operational. You know, we're still working. Obviously, some of our teams are working from home. Some of our departments are closed. But I think a lot of it is people want to enjoy the experience. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to enjoy the day. And I know a lot of families took the day off and are going to be teaching their kids about yeah. what it is. And this is a really neat celestial event.
Now all we have to worry about is the one thing we can't control, which is the weather.
Yeah. So yeah. I've been praying a lot. So I think everybody else should do the same. We're looking good. And, yeah. you know, I talked to someone who travels the world. They have seen multiple eclipses.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, it's going to get dark regardless. So even if it's a bit cloudy, you're yeah. going to still be able to experience it. But I'm feeling good. I think it's going to be a beautiful day. We're going to have a great time. And Flag City USA is going to be shown off.
All right. We will hold you to that.
Perfect.
Then. If it's cloudy, then we'll go and we'll blame
then you guys
we'll
didn't pray well enough.
We'll blame the mayor. Findlay Mayor Christina Mern with us this morning. Thanks very much for dropping
by. It's great to see you as always.
So happening today is a coda to the Easter celebration. Some 40,000 people are expected to take part in the traditional Easter egg roll on the south lawn of the White House and surrounding grounds. It is an event that dates all the way back to 1878 when President Rutherford B. Hayes opened the White House lawn to children who were kicked off the grounds of the U.S. Capitol. Those grumpy old men at the U.S. Capitol said, "Get off my lawn!" And so the president said, "Sure, kids, you can come over and have fun on the White House lawn." And that eventually led to the tradition that we have each and every year, the White House Easter egg roll. And obviously, you can't have an Easter egg roll without eggs. And America's egg farmers not only supplying thousands of them for this event, but will also present Dr. Jill Biden with the 47th annual First Lady's commemorative eggs, specially designed around this year's theme of education, or egg-ucation, as the theme is designated this year. We are honored this morning ahead of the White House Easter egg roll to be joined by the President CEO of the American Egg Board, Emily Metz. Emily, tell us more about this tradition of presenting the First Lady with a special commemorative egg at the Easter egg roll.
Thanks, Chris. So excited to be here with you today. Lots of things happening for eggs. This is the egg season. More than 3 billion eggs are consumed this year. It's our Super Bowl, baby. It is a big time of year. You can't have Easter. You can't have Passover. You can't have spring without eggs. And so lots of fun stuff happening both, you know, around the world, in our homes here in the U.S., and of course in D.C., where we will be presenting Dr. Jill Biden with a very, very special egg. One of those 3 billion is a very special egg. We hire an artist every year to transform a real chicken egg into a beautiful creation for the first ladies of the U.S., paying tribute to them, their individual passions, their contributions to our country and their service. We started this tradition back with Amy Carter, actually, the first daughter.
Hmm.
And ever since Amy Carter in the 70s, we presented a first lady with a commemorative egg every year, really representing who they are and their individual causes and passions. And so this year we'll be presenting Dr. Biden with her fourth egg. as we've done for the last three years of her being First Lady. This will be our fourth year presenting her with an egg. It's going to be an awesome egg. It is all about children, all about education. It's all about imagination. And what are you going to imagine yourself being when you grow up? And how can education really help make those dreams come true? So it's a little bit top secret in terms of the design until we present it, but look out for it because it's going to be breathtaking and you'll be able to see a lot of pictures of it.
As you said, this is the big season for eggs. You cannot celebrate the holiday, cannot celebrate spring without eggs. Most of us don't have the ability to go out and hire a world-renowned artist to create the special egg. What would be some of your Easter egg decorating tips?
Well, we've got two really hot trends that we're watching, Chris. You can find both of them as well as a bunch of other decorating ideas on our Instagram at Incredible Egg or on our website, incredibleegg.org. But two really fun ones that I love. The first one is a disco ball egg. So lots of things that are pretty groovy are coming from a disco ball egg. And then we've also got an egg formation egg, which is affirmations on an egg. Really, really fun. Lots to do there. Lots of fun stuff. IncredibleEgg.org.
Very cool. We mentioned the White House Easter egg roll. It is a tradition this year. The theme is the Easter Eggucation roll. Talk a little bit about America's egg farmers and the American Egg Board contribution to the event every year.
We've got more than 64,000 eggs headed to the White House lawn this year. From one of our farm families in North Carolina, Braswell Family Farms, and we're part of all of those activities on the lawn with real eggs. It's incredibly exciting. I'm out of time, but it's been so fun to talk to you, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for joining us, Emily. We appreciate it.
Thank you, and happy Easter.
Well, an interesting new study here from Equitable Life Insurance Company, which puts the spotlight on the differences in which men and women approach money issues. Specifically, that women are much more motivated by the here and now, their immediate financial needs, and their level of financial confidence changes as their lives change. Connie Weaver is Chief Marketing Officer at Equitable. Now, Connie, I want to be very careful here because I don't want this to be construed as that we're saying, as long as you have a man to take care of the money, you're fine. But if you get divorced or you become widowed, it all falls apart. But the point of the study is, in fact, to look at how women's relationship with money does change or evolve based on those personal relationships, right?
Chris, you're exactly right. Women are an incredibly powerful force financially now and will be even more so in the future. After all, we are living longer. More than half of our clients are women. And as such, we tend to be planners, problem solvers. Women often focus more on the short term than they do on the long term, particularly when it comes to financial plans and investments.
So with that in mind,
we undertook the study of women in relationships and what happens when they move in and out of relationships, such as through marriage, being single, a divorce, or widowhood. And let me tell you, it has a big impact on not only the way their financial plans evolve, but on confidence.
Yeah, I was going to ask, share some of the key findings from this women, money, and relationships study. What were some of the things that jumped out to you?
Well, this rich study brought forth a number of key findings. One of the most notable ones is 2/3 of women wish they had gotten involved early and also often with their own financial planning. For example, women in a relationship, partners, married, they have the strongest confidence among all of the groups served. After all, two wallets can be better than one. But if they become uncoupled through divorce, through becoming widowed, that confidence drops like a rock and it happens immediately. They wish they had had a seat at the table. They wish they had understood more about their near-term and long-term financial situation. They wish they hadn't delegated so much often to the other partner. It's interesting to note that 60% of women even though they're at the table in the conversation around financial matters, do not feel hurt. Thirdly, single women, while their confidence varies, frankly, they're less likely to work with a financial advisor. That's an opportunity.
And as it happens, I think just point this out, you yourself can relate to a lot of these things that we're seeing in the survey. You've been married, widowed, single, now newly engaged. So congratulations on that. So what advice would you have based on your own experience combined with what you see in the study here? What advice would you have for women who want to improve their financial wellness at whatever stage that we're talking about here?
Well, Chris, thank you for sharing that, because I feel very personal about the research and the findings. And yes, I have virtually been through every stage, losing my husband about 3.5 years ago, very suddenly. I'm a person who's worked in the industry and is pretty comfortable working in the financial area, but I delegated a lot of those financial responsibilities. I was too busy. I was working on my career. I was doing many other things. And therefore, I wasn't as engaged as I should have been. As a result of that death, I lost confidence. I sought the advice of an advisor, and I'm happy to say I'm both back on track and got married 2 weeks ago. But I did become my own statistic. And so when I think about that, it's very personal when I think about the advice I give. And that is, number one, take an active seat at the table. Don't just be there physically. Be all in, lean in, be there mentally. Because you can't really delegate this, even if you're uncomfortable or if you have a lot to learn, ask those questions. Number two, know your numbers. How much money do you have? Is it working for you? Is it working for you now? Is it working for you in the future? Really understand the today and tomorrow. Third, and probably most important, you've got to have a plan to put you on track and to find success. Many women find success in seeking out the advice of a financial professional. As a matter of fact, 72% of women working with financial professionals today have a written plan. And that compares to 16% of women who have a written plan who are not working with professionals. You know, it really comes down to engagement. And when I look at some of the findings, looking at a number like 92% of women working with advisors are actively saving for retirement, that is really powerful. That's how women engage. And frankly, that's how women take control of their destiny.
And just to underscore something you were mentioning earlier, women have a tremendous amount of economic power these days, and most women will experience multiple life stages like that. I mean, again, the statistics don't lie. Women generally live longer, so much more likely to be in multiple statuses, those relationship statuses, the way that it changed. It's just underscores why it's important to understand how and why those financial attitudes of women and their behaviors change throughout life.
You are 100% right. And by getting engaged, by taking control, by having a plan, you can smooth out those highs and lows and maintain that level of confidence that you need to go forward.
Again, Connie Weaver is Chief Marketing Officer at Equitable. We mentioned the study on women's attitudes toward money through different life stages. Where do we get more information, more advice for women as they take a kind of look in the mirror with respect to all of this?
Visit equitable.com. There you'll have an opportunity to get the full findings, other useful information, and if you so choose, to find an advisor. Whatever you do, take action.
Absolutely. We will have that linked up at our webpage as well. Connie, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's my great pleasure. Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Now, I saw this story on the Newswire this morning to lead off the broken news, and I'm wondering what in the world would possess someone to do this. 37-year-old Samantha Gonzalez smoked toad venom in Mexico in search of a spiritual experience, but got more than she bargained for. It says here, the smoked toad venom in Mexico. The experience, she said, caused me to vomit and feel waves of terror. You feel like a baby again, and it's scary. It was scary for me, she said. If I were to recommend this for someone, I would recommend something where you get to spend the whole day with a facilitator. While some doctors believe that toad venom could be useful in treating anxiety and depression, medical experts warn that the venom can be very dangerous and has a high potential for abuse. Dr. Mike Dow says, with a trauma-informed therapist, it is one of the most effective treatments for PTSD. But without therapy, it can re-traumatize people in a scary way. It can re-traumatize people in a scary way. Smoked toad venom in Mexico. If you're looking for a spring break experience, I guess. Your first warning that maybe you've done something wrong is that you go to Mexico to smoke toad venom. That's crazy. Who sees the brochure for this and says, hey, that sounds like a good idea. Let's go to Mexico to smoke toad venom. I don't know. It just sounds weird to me. Let's see. What else is going on in the odd and unusual side of the headlines? We have an update on a story out of Hollister, California. Days after a man was found hanging from the hood of a car, the woman who allegedly drove that way for almost a mile is now charged in the case. April Garcia was arrested last week. The 24-year-old claims that she went to see someone she met online but drove off when the man approached. She said he jumped on her car yelling threats before falling onto the pavement. Police, I remember this story a couple of weeks ago, the woman driving through California with a man on the hood of her car. He fell onto the pavement. Police believe that is not what actually happened, that she did not just go to meet up with someone that she got acquainted with online and that she was scared. No, police say that there was most likely a transaction between the two, and the woman took off with his money. That's what they believe actually happened. Alrighty, sorting that out there. There was a transaction involved, and the woman took off with his money. Okay. This is a crazy story. Out of Wayne County, Kentucky, a woman is in jail for allegedly trying to run over her boyfriend. It happened Thursday morning. Police were called for a report of an altercation. The boyfriend showed police a video of his girlfriend allegedly backing up her vehicle to try and run him over. Amanda Parmley has been arrested on charges of assault. And I would imagine that she is in the market for a new boyfriend. I can't believe that relationship didn't work. It seems so stable. That's seems like a lovely girl. Now this though is this is true love. Where is this? It says Lancaster County, but I don't know Lancaster County. Where? I'm sure there are multiple states with a Lancaster County. It doesn't delineate the actual state. It just says Lancaster County. Anyway, a woman is facing charges after she allegedly delivered drugs. Oh, here it is, Nebraska. Lancaster County, Nebraska. A woman facing charges after she allegedly delivered drugs to the Nebraska State Penitentiary. She was delivering drugs to the penitentiary. Apparently, she was trying to pass them to an inmate. Now, that's true love. when you're willing to try to smuggle drugs into a prison, it doesn't seem too bright. State officials say 24-year-old Aubrey Vakulik was arrested on Wednesday on a felony charge of unlawful acts in the Department of Corrections. The charge reportedly stems from an incident in February. During a visitation, she was allegedly transferring a small quantity of synthetic marijuana to an inmate. She now is an inmate herself. Not sure who will bring her drugs. That's what you get. You try to be nice to someone you care about in the jail and just get you into all kinds of trouble. Never ceases to amaze me. And did you hear this story? This is a crazy story. You know, it's spring break. Excuse me. It is spring break time. Now, busy travel season. And a Texas man is now facing federal charges for allegedly scamming his way onto a flight without a ticket. Wycliffe Florizard got through security at the Salt Lake Airport with a buddy. They were flying on Southwest Airlines. They actually had a ticket for a Southwest Airlines flight, but it turned out that the flight was delayed, or it was canceled, or it was taking off at a time that Mr. Florizard wanted to apparently get to Utah earlier than the Southwest flight was going to allow him to get to his destination. He was in a hurry. So he used his cell phone to secretly take pictures of another passenger's boarding pass, which then he used to board a Delta flight instead. Wow. Just because he couldn't wait, apparently. Court papers show that he boarded the Delta flight, hid in the bathroom until the plane started rolling. When he came out, the stewardess said, the flight attendant asked him to take his seat, but that's when they discovered that he didn't have a seat. And because the flight that he tried to board with the fake boarding pass, because that flight was full, he couldn't fake it. There was no seat for him to take, and thus his plan was busted. The pilot had to taxi back to the gate where Mr. Florizard was arrested. File that under the category of sounded like a good idea at the time. And he was so close. He actually got on board the flight, but his plan was thwarted when there was not a seat available. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. The odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
When you're behind the wheel, it's okay to rock out to your music, but it's not okay to interact with your phone screen and electronic devices while driving. In most cases, anything more than a single touch or swipe is against the law. That means no texting, no typing, no scrolling, no shopping, no browsing. If an officer sees a violation, they can pull you over. So remember, Ohio, phones down. It's the law.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This, I thought, was a really interesting statistic that I saw on the Newswire this morning. Harvard University saw a 5% drop in applications for the class of 2028 and a 17% decline in early admissions applications this upcoming year. Their acceptance rate is up, but the number of applications is down. Now, other Ivy League schools, Yale, Dartmouth, Columbia, all saw an increase in applications. Interesting, because you remember former Harvard president Claudine Gay stepped down after testifying at a testy congressional hearing about their policies on harassment and anti-Semitic activity on campus. University has been in the news regarding race-based admissions policies and so on. The extent to which you got to figure that some of that that has been in the news, that has been negative publicity for Harvard, has impacted the admissions rate that they have seen for the upcoming class. 5% drop in applications at Harvard, while every other Ivy League school has seen an increase in applications. So for many, many years now, the Findlay Rotary Club has honored, honestly, a whole generation of educators in the community through their Golden Apple Awards, and there is still time to nominate a deserving teacher for recognition this year. We are joined by Bo Bryant, the Findlay Rotary Club, and the Golden Apple Committee. And by the way, before we start, I have to own up and apologize because for those regular listeners to the program, last Thursday, we spent the entire morning saying that we were going to talk about the Golden Apple Awards last Thursday, and then we didn't. And that was entirely our fault. I don't know how this worked, how we got our wires crossed, but for some reason, I was thinking it was going to be Thursday, and I wanted to make sure that I owned up and fessed up that that was our mistake. It wasn't that you were a no-show on Thursday.
Oh, gosh.
No, because that was our mistake. It's not that we haven't had no shows on the program before, sure. But in this case, it was our mistake. So I want to make sure that nobody blames you.
No one helped that
to
me. Yeah.
We mentioned this is decades that the Rotary Club has been honoring local educators, and it is such an important program.
Yeah, I was looking, I'm came into this role, I saw it was, started in 1990. I'm like, okay, that's 24. No, that's 34. Yeah. It hit me all at once. This has been going on for quite some time.
Yeah, literally a generation of educators. Yes. And talk about what makes this such a prestigious honor for an educator to be awarded the Golden Apple.
Yeah, I think, I think all teachers do a fantastic service to the community, but I think what this program allows us to do is to really dig in and meet with these individuals who have been nominated by former students, current students, parents, administration. I mean, these people who really see these individuals going above and beyond. This year's theme is From Classroom to Community, because I think teachers do a great job in the classroom, but it's how is that impacting our community in a positive way? And that's truly what separates.
I would imagine to be a part of this committee and to, be in charge of heading all of this up, that's a pretty weighty thing as well. You recognize that there's a lot on your shoulders to do in sorting through all of it.
To do it right, I think. My wife's, we live in Lima, my wife and I, my family, and she's a kindergarten teacher, and so I kind of have that firsthand view, not experience, view of what goes into teaching. And so I have the most profound respect to where ever since I've been asked in this role, it's like, don't mess it up type thing. So
don't mess it up.
That's why I'm here on the radio trying to tell everybody about it, because I think teachers don't get the recognition that they deserve. And so for us as a community and as a Rotary Club to be able to come together and do our part to at least get some recognition out there, I think it's a fantastic opportunity.
So the nomination process is open, through this week,
yes,
right?
Through Friday.
This is the final week to nominate someone. It is really easy to start the ball rolling on this.
Yeah. So we're looking for preschool through 12th grade teacher who's taught for a minimum of 3 years in either Findlay's school districts or anywhere in Hancock County. If you were wanting to make a nomination, you can certainly visit findlayrotary.org. You'll see it right on our homepage, Golden Apple Awards. You just fill it out through there. We take the nominations. We go through, identify our semifinalists, and then we'll have our award ceremony Wednesday, October 18th. I'm sorry, Wednesday, October 18th at 5:30 p.m. at Weinbrenner's.
That is really interesting that we're getting the nomination deadline is the first week of April, yeah. And yet the awards will not be handed out until October. Yeah. So talk a little bit about the process, what yeah. goes on between now and then.
Sure. Yeah, so we'll get all of our nominations. We have a community selection committee, which is made up of not Rotary members. These are people who have either self-selected or said they wanted to be a part of the process to kind of review all of our initial applications. And they'll go through and find three semifinalists from elementary, middle, and high school. And then they'll turn those nominations over to our Finley Rotary Golden Apple committee. We actually go in, do one-on-one interviews with each teacher that's been nominated as a semifinalist, and we'll also do a classroom observation and kind of see how, not that we know what we're doing, right, but we just kind of see how they, you know, how they're interacting with the children and
you
stuff like that.
You can get that vibe.
Exactly.
When you're in the classroom, yes. you kind of get that sense immediately that there's something special about some of these teachers.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to the classroom observations that we did last year, and it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, each teacher did it different, but it was such an engaging environment. It's like, I don't remember it being that way when I was growing up. Maybe I'm naive or whatever, but mm-hmm. It's truly different nowadays, yeah. And what an opportunity for these teachers to really grasp that and make a difference in their students' lives.
The one thing that you do get a sense, as you were saying, is that there are a lot of teachers that are finding new and innovative ways to engage with yeah. students, because in this day and age, it becomes more and more difficult to do that.
Yeah, I think COVID certainly pushed that a lot further along. You know, mm-hmm. I remember my wife trying to lead a kindergarten classroom
yeah.
from the kitchen table.
I can imagine how challenging that would be.
Oh, yeah. It was just saying hi to all the kids and telling stories. But that just shows the true power that teachers have, because they were given nothing and still were able to turn it into a positive learning experience for all the students. And so to take that technology and continue to grow mm-hmm. and build upon that. I know what my children can do with iPads and headsets yeah. and stuff.
Well,
so
yeah, you talk about COVID and that kind of extreme use of technology, but technology in general has,
yes.
I mean, again, we talk about the times when we were in school.
Yeah.
It is a completely different world.
Yeah, we have laptops in fifth grade, you know, or yeah. Chromebooks, and we're doing math and we're submitting everything up on a big projector where everybody's playing.
Right.
I mean, it's just so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So cool.
When I was in school, the coolest thing was to get to clean the erasers, and that's, you don't do that anymore.
No,
that's for sure. So this really takes a long time. You do a deep dive
yes.
Into these teachers and the skill sets and what they bring to the classroom.
Exactly.
Got to be a really difficult choice.
Yeah, that was the toughest part, and I think that's why we as a committee try to You'd want them all to win, you
yeah.
know, and that's the toughest part. But I think you truly do when you sit down and look at everything all together and consider everything. I mean, there are some that just go that extra step. And
yeah.
and so, yeah, those are the ones that win that year. But it certainly, the teachers will get nominated again the following year, it
sure.
seems. So.
And then the winners, the ones that are selected at each level, and there are three. There's one for each level, elementary, middle, and high school
yes.
levels. Obviously, recognition is important, but then they also get a stipend.
Yeah, so we have a Golden Apple Award mm-hmm. that all of our three winners are presented with, and then the Finley Rotary Club also gives a $2,500 cash award to each winner.
It's amazing. I know over the years, the number of teachers that will use that and just invest it right back into their kids and their classrooms rather than putting it, just kind of emphasizes how dedicated they are
sure.
to their craft.
And we tell them every time, you know, don't spend this on your classroom. Don't spend this on your students.
This is for you.
But you know 95. Yeah. You know they all probably
do. You know they're going to do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And that's great.
As we said, it's a long and involved process,
yeah.
but that's on your end. The nomination process is actually very simple.
Yeah, very simple. You can go to finleyrotary.org, click on Golden Apple. We'll ask you a couple questions about who you're nominating and what makes them special to you. So we have a great number of nominations so far, representing pretty much every school here in Hancock County, but we're always looking for as many as we can get in.
And again, the deadline for nominations is Friday
April 5th.
We've got the link up at our webpage, goodmornings.net. And again, Bo Bryant with the Findlay Rotary Club and the Golden Apple Committee. Thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program is a follow-up to our conversation about that new study on gender differences when it comes to money management and long-term financial security. We'll tell you about an innovative program that helps women overcome generational poverty created by a woman who has lived it and overcome it herself. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.